Taiwan has dismissed a move by the UN Human Rights Council to announce a fact-finding mission on the recent incidents in the country. Nearly 200 Palestinians and international organizations call on the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's war crimes against Palestinians. And Belgian police clash with a group of football fans in Brussels following Morocco's win over Belgium in the Qatar World Cup. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran has dismissed a move by the UN Human Rights Council to announce a fact-finding mission on the recent incidents in the country. The foreign ministry spokesman says Iran will not cooperate with the UN mission. Nasser Kanani says Iran has already formed a national fact-finding committee to look into the events. Kanani also has been warning that some Western countries are using human rights for political objectives. He says that this undermines the legitimacy of the UN mechanism. The anti-Iran resolution by the UN Human Rights Council was proposed by Germany on Monday. The Iranian Foreign Ministry summoned the German ambassador to lodge a strong protest over the move. The ministry also slammed as baseless and meddlesome the recent comments by the German officials on the situation in Iran. For more on that, we're joined by John Stepling, author and commentator, who is with us from Norway. If you could please tell us your opinion regarding the fact that European countries, a small number of European countries, by the way, keep meddling in Iran's internal affairs, and now they're suggesting a fact-finding mission to see what happened during the riots. And this is despite the fact that Iran has its own fact-finding mission regarding the matter.
Well, this is a typical scenario for the United States. It's the Libya, Syria, Ukraine scenario, all the color revolutions. The U.S. goes in and creates unrest, hijacks, protests. John Bolton, as much as admitted, that the U.S. is covertly arming opposition groups against Iran and so forth. One of the cover story in this particular case is women's rights, human rights, and so forth. And the hypocrisy is pretty obvious. It hardly needs explaining at this point. But, this is, the U.S. doesn't care about women's rights in Saudi Arabia, for example, or the rights of Palestinian women, or, on and on and on. But this is exactly what was done in Libya and Syria. I mean, the United States wanted to get rid of Assad. The United States decided it needed to get rid of Gaddafi, especially because he had proposed a trans-African currency, a gold dinar. These things are unacceptable, and this is what the CIA does. And they have a budget of untold, tens of millions of dollars, and this is the sort of thing they spend it on. So the protests that may have begun as small, legitimate protests were very quickly hijacked. We know that one of the actors, Ms. Ahlinejad, is friends with Mike Pompeo, has had meetings with Mike Pompeo and other U.S. Government officials. So the U.N. taking part in this U.S.-created narrative is unfortunate, but the UN is increasingly unreliable and without credibility. They are increasingly at the bidding of the United States, and you see that with the Ukraine story and the hypocrisy around that. But the ultimate goal of the United States is, in their eyes, regime change in Tehran, the same as the entire Ukraine conflict. The ultimate goal is regime change in Moscow. These are equally delusional ideas, but such is the mindset of the Straussian neocon cabal in Washington. They have very fanciful and extremist ideologies, and they think it's perfectly okay to interfere in the affairs of sovereign nations. And that's what's going on here. And the UN is going along with it and not questioning the information they get from the United States.
And under such circumstances, how do you see the situation? Do you believe that Iran should be cooperating with such a fact-finding mission?
No, no. I think there's no reason at all for Iran to participate on any level with this, because it only serves to at least partly legitimize the process, and it's an illegitimate project. Iran has nothing to gain. I think they should sever all ties with the United States, I mean diplomatic ties, because I don't see the good that can come out of it at this point. The U.S. has sanctioned Iran. These are criminal sanctions. The United States sanctions almost everybody, but they have illegally sanctioned Iran. Iran agreed to the JCPOA, bent over backwards to meet all its requirements, and the United States tore it up anyway. The U.S. is very big on tearing up treaties and international agreements. Iran has done none of that, and yet they are constantly the object of this rhetorical abuse from the U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia, European media. It's unbelievably biased, and it's very hard, I think, for the Western public to get an accurate picture of the situation vis-a-vis Iran, because much as it is impossible for Western public to get a picture of Russia, because the reporting is so extraordinarily biased and one-sided.
Thank you very much. John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us live from Norway. On the occasion of Basij Week, Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed members of the volunteer force. Basij, which is affiliated to Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, has been at the forefront of confronting rioters in the country. In his speech, the leader said that negotiating with the U.S. will not resolve anything, adding that Iran's main confrontation is with the global hegemony and not a bunch of rioters.
It was an important forum, comprised of volunteer forces that have been at the forefront in confronting the rioters. The all-too-important Basij force, which throughout the decades have not only served in the security arena, have contributed to Iran's advancements in a host of fields like science and technology. Iran's leader, in his address to them for the occasion of Basij Week, said that these forces have sacrificed themselves in order to save people from a bunch of rioters and mercenaries. But he also advised them on who the real enemy is, that in the bigger picture, Iran's battle is not with a group of rioters, but with global hegemony. The onslaught on Iran, especially through the media, has been organized by foreign actors, like from Saudi Arabia and the UK, with US and Israel aiding and abetting their fake news. The primary goal has been to create unrest inside of Iran by inviting Iranians to come out and protest. At the same time, there are some under the misguided belief that talking to the U.S. will solve Iran's problems.
I've been notified that the U.S. president has said that he's seeking to free Iran. Mr. President, Iran was freed 43 years ago and is determined not to get subjugated. And Iran will never be your milking cow.
But Iran's leader has said that negotiating will not resolve anything, saying that our problem with America can only be resolved by letting that country hold us to ransom.
Iran has held several rounds of talks with the West over its civilian nuclear program, but the negotiations have not yielded the results that Iran wants. The main reason has been the U.S.'s excessive demands and its lack of will to compromise. The U.S. wants to strip Iran of all of its capabilities, which includes its nuclear knowledge and defense capabilities like missiles.
There have been lots of speculations as to why the riots began in the first place, especially the timing, which came when the JCPOA sanctions removal talks with world powers were deadlocked over Washington's lack of commitment. It is a distinct possibility that the recent riots may have been part of the West's pressure on Iran to compromise on its rights in negotiations, including with the U.S. Yet the whole notion on continuing with these talks is not in the best interest of Iran and can never bear fruit due to the West and U.S.'s excessive demands. Realistically, the U.S. wants Iran to abandon its nuclear program, to change its constitution, restrict its influence to inside of its borders, and to close its defense industries, basically stripping the country of its identity. Some of these restrictions and excessive demands are due to Israel, which acts in line with U.S. policies to maintain dominance over the region. After all, the U.S. has worked hard to vilify Iran through Iranophobia in the region, pushing Persian Gulf Arab countries to normalize ties with Israel to unite against regional power, Iran. That is one of the reasons that Iran has time and again said that the U.S. must leave the West Asia region, as it only seeks to weaken and ultimately disintegrate Muslim countries, as stated by advisor to Iran's leader, Ali Akbar Velayati. The U.S. has played a destructive role in the region, like pushing hard for the partitioning of Iraq and Syria, trying to do the same with Iran. This has been a goal of the U.S., a West Asia region whose borders can be redrawn to their liking, with the ultimate goal of having vassal states serving U.S. interests. But when it comes to Iran, that will be an impossible feat. One only has to look at the most recent showing of Iranians when it came to their large-scale presence earlier this month during pro-government demonstrations, and for the funeral of Iranian commander Qasem Soleimani, whom the U.S. assassinated back in 2020 from a drone strike in Baghdad. Not to mention the funeral processions which Iranians participated in, the funerals held in Karaj, Isfahan, and Shiraz.
Nearly 200 Palestinian and international organizations have called on the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's acts of aggression against Palestinians. The NGOs say the probe should cover crimes committed by Israel during its war on the Gaza Strip last August. They said the regime has engaged in war crimes and crimes against humanity, including the crime of apartheid against Palestinians. They called for appropriate measures to prevent such crimes. The organization also slammed Israel's move to label Palestinian civil society organizations as terrorists and called for public condemnation of such measures. Palestinians have witnessed a sharp increase in Israeli attacks this year. The regime has killed more than 200 Palestinians this year, almost a quarter of them children. An organization observing human rights situation in Yemen has released shocking figures documenting the crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition during its aggression there. The Eye of Humanity Center for Human Rights and Development says more than 18,000 people have been killed in nearly 8 years of war on Yemen. That includes nearly 4,800 children. The center says nearly 600,000 homes have also been destroyed during the war. It adds that universities, schools, mosques, airports, power stations, and factories and medical facilities were completely destroyed during the aggression. Many of those public places were prime targets of the coalition warplanes. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in March 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Riyadh has defied international calls to stop the deadly aggressions and blockade. Earlier, we asked our correspondent in Yemen, Youssef Mari, to give us a report and put things in perspective.
This report by Eye of Humanity is very misleading. And the reason why I say that is because this report or these statistics, their compiling of the figures, is only taken into consideration the numbers of casualties as a result of the airstrikes and as a result of the Saudi aerial tens of thousands of innocent Yemenis. According to the BBC, back in 2020, in a story that they published, 85,000 innocent Yemeni children, they died as a result of the blockade. So when you take into consideration all of the casualties as a result of the aerial bombardment, and also add to that the casualties as a result of the Saudi-imposed blockade on food supplies and medical supplies, the total and overall number of death casualties here in Yemen as a result of the war well surpasses over 100,000 innocent Yemenis. And that's when you take into consideration the death casualties from the airstrikes and from the Saudi-imposed blockade on Yemen's economy, which is preventing basic medical and food supplies from entering the country. Let's also not forget that thousands of Yemenis have also died due to poor medical supplies, and because they needed to be transported out of the country. However, they could not do so because Saudi Arabia also imposed sanctions on Sana'a International Airport.
Morocco's FIFA World Cup win against Belgium triggers clashes after a Moroccan community bursts into celebrations in the Belgian capital. Dozens of fans smashed out windows, threw fireworks and torched vehicles. About 100 officers used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the rioters. Police say 11 people were arrested. Also in the eastern city of Liga, a gang of 50 people attacked a police station, breaking windows and damaging two police vehicles. Police there also resorted to water cannons. Belgium is home to around 500,000 people of Moroccan descent. Morocco beat Belgium 2-0 in their World Cup face-off. A study shows Brexit has compounded a shortage of doctors in Britain, with an estimated shortfall of 4,000 in major specialty areas from the European Union countries. A study by the Nuffield Trust, an independent health think tank, indicates that the UK relied upon European doctors in several fields of medicine before leaving the bloc. This suggests that the recruitment of European medical staff has slowed down, falling below the projected increase. The survey shows that if the pre-Brexit trend continues, there should have been more than 41,000 doctors from the EU or the European Free Trade Association registered in 2021. This comes as the crisis hit state-funded health service NHS struggles after years of underfinancing last week. The Royal College of Nursing announced that the strike action, that the first strike action, that is, in its 106-year working history, and that is because of bad working conditions and chronic staff shortages. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
The United States of America is a country that suffers from violence and daily killing of its citizens. But in the last months of this year, 2022, the level of violence and the use of firearms by the American people against each other has reached a peak. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper gives us more detail. According to the non-profit organization Gun Violence Archive, there have been a total of 609 mass shootings in 2022 in the United States so far, putting the country on pace to reach around 675 by the end of this year. Last year saw a shocking 690 mass shootings across the United States, up from 610 in 2020, and 417 mass shootings in 2019. The Gun Violence Archive database researchers said on Wednesday, 23rd of November, the country is three mass shootings away from 2022 being the second highest yearly total since we began tracking data. By Thursday, the country was just two shootings away from that dark milestone. At least five people were killed and a dozen and a half injured in a mass shooting incident at a nightclub in the U.S. city of Colorado Springs recently, and six individuals were shot dead on Wednesday, 23rd of November, at a Walmart superstore in Chesapeake, Virginia. According to the Gun Violence Archive, a total of 39,820 people have so far lost their lives in gun violence incidents in the U.S. this year alone. Over 18,000 of deaths were homicides, while around 21,500 deaths were declared suicides. The Gun Violence Archive researchers said after the Colorado incident, Gun Violence Archive had never logged a month of 60-plus mass shootings before 2020. It happened five times in 2020, six times in 2021, and now six times again this year. According to Gun Violence Archive, the U.S. has experienced an average of 1.68 mass shooting incidents per day so far this year. The 2018 Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 393 million firearms in civilian hands in the United States, or 120.5 firearms per 100 people. That number is much higher now, given the soaring increase in gun sales in the past few years. U.S. President Joe Biden in July admitted that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields and vowed to reinstate a ban on assault rifles. The remarks came in a White House ceremony to mark new gun control legislation that President Biden signed on 25th of June. Biden said, "This has taken too long with too much of a trail of bloodshed and carnage. The past many years, across our schools, places of worship, workplaces, stores, music festivals, nightclubs, and so many other everyday places, they have turned into killing fields." The Tehran Times has also covered the same story. Amid growing political polarization, more Americans are buying guns amid a climate of fear and insecurity. The United States has marked the third consecutive year that the country has registered more than 600 mass shooting incidents. The spike, documented by a prominent non-governmental organization, comes as a record number of Americans purchase guns amid a political landscape that fuels fears of violence amid growing polarization. The Gun Violence Archive has labeled mass shooting incidents as an American phenomena and defines the deadly incidents as any attack in which there are at least four victims shot, injured, or murdered by a gun, but excluding the perpetrator of the attack. The latest statistics paints a disturbing picture of increasing gun violence in a country where there is so much political division that American news outlets are openly speaking about the dangers of a civil war. The latest figures have also been released as Donald Trump has announced his candidacy for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024, nearly 2 years after inspiring the deadly insurrection on Capitol Hill. The former president and his supporters strongly believe that the U.S. election was rigged in favor of his rival Joe Biden. Among Donald Trump's supporters are white supremacists and other armed extremist groups. Trump received more votes in the 2020 presidential election than he did in the 2016 presidential election. In 2020, the Republican candidate enjoyed the support of more than 70 million Americans, an indication of how many of the American public maintained support for Donald Trump's views and rhetoric. It also shows how polarized the United States has become. This is despite the many challenges facing Donald Trump, including the latest FBI raid on his Florida residence at Mar-a-Lago that angered his fan base, who have also expressed their strong belief in voter fraud in the last election. Experts say the deep divisions in the country, alongside the vast mass shooting incidents, will likely spark further turmoil in U.S. politics and potential violence among voters of the Republican and Democratic parties. The Insider website has also covered the same story and gives us more details. Following the Colorado shooting, President Joe Biden urged the country to address the public health epidemic of gun violence in all of its forms. President Biden said, "Earlier this year, I signed the most significant gun safety law in nearly three decades, in addition to taking other historic actions." It has been very clear that Biden's most significant gun safety law in nearly three decades has had no effect on the increasing figures of gun violence, as 2022 is set to go down in the history of the United States as a year during which the second highest number of mass shooting incidents took place. The other problem in the U.S. is that, with the National Rifle Association, NRA, an extremely powerful gun lobby in Congress that advocates for the right of U.S. citizens to carry weapons. Opinion surveys show that only 52% of the American public actually support any form of gun control. According to polling by Gallup, only 11% of the population say that gun laws should be made less strict. Experts say this shows an environment of insecurity and fear that Americans live in. Not only are Americans concerned about political violence and the future of their democracy, but also the rising rate of crime in the U.S. Gun ownership significantly increased over the last few years. Earlier this year, research by the Annals of Internal Medicine found that 7.5 million American adults, under 3% of the population, became the first new gun owners between January of 2019 and April of 2021. These are the latest statistics from the Gun Violence Archive, as of 24th of November 2022. The total number of deaths as a result of gun violence that involved all causes stood at just shy of 40,000 deaths, with 39,845 incidents documented. Homicides, murders, and unintentional deaths stood at 18,197. Suicides using firearms stood at 21,648.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
جنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة
وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood, and we're focusing on the second sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha, where he talks about the grounds and the circumstances of the society and the historical, circumstance in which the prophets sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and generally the prophets arrived for mankind. And we say that the actual problem that the people faced was the problem of misguidance, and the problem of misguidance is mostly a spiritual problem, a problem that is related to the way people think, the way they perceive, the way they perceive reality, and the way they focus their hearts. And this was the actual problem that Imam Ali alayhi salam says. And all of the other problems that people face in the society were offshoots of this problem. And that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about what the messengers came with. So when the messengers came, they didn't just come with a political structure and a political system. They didn't just come with a social, system. No, they say they came with guidance. أرسله بالدين المشهور والعلم المأثور. And he goes on to say والضياء اللامع, an illuminating light. Why did he bring all of this? Why did he come with all of these things? Why did he do all of these things? إزاحة للشبهات. The prophets, they came with this light, they came with this religion, with this flag of guidance. Why? So that they can remove, they can extinguish these doubts that were there in the minds of the people.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam makes a very important claim. A very important claim in the sense that this claim thwarts all the ideas of various different thinkers and philosophers who claim that sociological changes, or who claim that the actual, issues that create any type of change in the society, that lead to a change in the system of the social structures, are the social economic circumstances of that place and that time. And that is what leads to other issues after that. Imam Ali al-Islam says, no, all of these have a root cause, and those are the spiritual problems. And this is very important, because when Imam Ali al-Islam says that the Prophet came with a religion, a very clear religion, with a flag that was pioneering, with a lamp that was enlightening, when he mentions all of these things, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, why does he bring all of these things? Why does the Prophet come with all of these things? Izahatan li shubahat. He comes with these to extinguish doubts, to extinguish that state that people were in, whereby right and wrong was mixed, where truth and falsehood was amalgamated in a way that people could not distinguish between these, this mixture. And that's why they were confused. The community was in a state of problem with regards to their beliefs. And this is the source of all those problems. Their understanding was flawed. And people, for example, they started to believe that we need, for example, a dictator to rule us. They had forgotten that they actually need a spiritual guide to remove them from the darknesses that they were in. They don't just need a powerful dictatorial ruler who clobbers them and forces them to go in a direction that he himself wants. But it is the law of the one who created you that needs to be manifested in your life. So for example, this is one of the issues that the people faced. And so prophets came and they changed this way of understanding and these wrong ideas that were there in the minds of the people.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, coming back to our discussion, we say that the actual cause and root of the problems of the communities are that spiritual issues, they are spiritual in nature. They are not material in nature as such. Yes, material nature, the material problems are there, but their root are those spiritual issues. And I think this has been quite discussed lengthily, so it doesn't need to be repeated. What is important here is the focus that Imam Ali alayhi salam gives to this issue. He says, إِزَاحَةً لِلشُّبَهَاتِ. And then he says, وَاحْتِجَاجًا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ. This religion that he brought, and this light of guidance and all of that, was brought in a state whereby this was bearing certain forms of arguments, very clear-cut arguments, very, very, you can say, apparent and clear arguments that could remove those people from that state of confusion. They didn't come with complicated philosophical arguments that would confuse people even further. They came with clear, simple, yet elegant, yet deep. Simple in the sense that everyone could understand. Deep in the sense that one who wanted to really understand deeper realities could go deeper and dig deeper into those words and understand the deeper understandings of those statements of wisdom. So this was there. It is the way the imams and the prophets and these guides, the way they presented those deep realities in simple terms and words and in very clear-cut arguments that was actually a point of attraction for people towards the right direction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
An exploded Israeli regime ordnance is scattered throughout the Gaza Strip, with at least 1,200 unexploded bombs reportedly found in 2021 in Gaza. These bombs have disabled a part of the population of Gaza and has deteriorated their living condition in the blockaded Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Kefah al-Zibda family has a 200-square-meter plot of agricultural land near Absan al-Kibra, a town in Gaza. In 2006, while tending to a crop of vegetables, which he sells at a local market, al-Zibda spotted a round metal object covered in something like copper, sitting atop the soil. As soon as he touched it, it exploded. His cousin heard the explosion and called an ambulance. Unexploded Zionist regime ordnance is scattered throughout the Gaza Strip, with at least 1,200 unexploded bombs reportedly found in 2021 in Gaza. Al-Zibda was 18 at the time of his injury. He is now 34 and partially paralyzed. And while he was lucky to survive the explosion, he has spent the past 16 years negotiating life as a person with a disability in the Gaza Strip. He has found that the already extant difficulties of life in Gaza are compounded for himself and others who have a disability. Al-Zibda has both struggled to access resources that would make his life easier and to receive medical treatment that would improve his condition. Between 2008 and 2021, he applied 13 times for a travel permit to the West Bank, and the Zionist regime has rejected every single one of those requests. In 2008, 2 years after his injury, doctors in Gaza told Al-Zibda that his knees were calcifying and that the arteries to his legs were obstructed. He prepared to travel to Nablus for knee surgery, but the Zionist regime refused his permit to travel. He said, "Finally, I had no other choice but to go to Egypt, where I had surgery on my knees, but unfortunately it failed." In 2016, he traveled again to Egypt for another knee surgery, but it also failed, producing no improvement in his condition. Mahmoud Abu Kamal, deputy manager of the Palestinian General Union of People with Disability, agrees that life for people with a disability in Gaza is trying, whether it's traveling outside of Gaza to receive medical treatment or accessing resources like an air mattress. He added, "Some people with disabilities don't feel they belong to society due to marginalization and challenges they face." After Al-Zibda's initial injury in 2006, doctors advise him to use an air mattress to avoid bed sores, yet even this has proved difficult. He said, "Although the air mattress helps me, the electricity outage for 8 to 16 hours daily exacerbates my suffering, as I have had bed sores for over a decade. It takes my air mattress 30 minutes to charge and the same period to collapse after the electricity is cut. He has no alternate source of power for when the electricity goes out in Gaza. So he is also unable to charge the battery of his scooter, which requires 10 hours of charging to go 20 miles. When the electricity is cut off, I can't get out of the house if the scooter is not charged," he said. "Even when his scooter is charged, the unpaved streets make mobility difficult." Abu Kamal noted that accessibility is an ongoing issue in the Gaza Strip. Abu Kamal said, "We discussed the adaptation of public buildings millions of times with officials, who always reply that these buildings are old and we can't afford to build new ones. If we get financial aid, we will build new accessible buildings. I had to crawl the stairs all the way up." Yusuf Abu Odeh, 37, has struggled with accessibility issues in Gaza's buildings and on its streets for years. Abu Odeh, along with three of his sisters, has cerebral palsy and requires a scooter to leave his home. In 2021, when his scooter broke, he tried to have it fixed but was told that the replacement parts would be even more expensive than just purchasing a new scooter. He requested a new scooter from Gaza's Social Development Ministry, but his request has not been fulfilled. Since the cost of a new scooter can run from $2,000 to $3,500 in Gaza, which is too expensive for many people who depend on social welfare, Shaksa applied to many non-profit societies to get a replacement, he said. "All of them told me they hadn't received funds, but if I had connections, their answer would change. I appeal to the international community to help marginalized people with disabilities in Gaza who don't belong to any political party. We suffer a lot from this situation that the Zionist regime has imposed on us." In May 2021, during a major Israeli regime attack on Gaza, Kefah al-Zebda was sitting in his house when shrapnel came flying through his windows. He lost two of his fingers as a result, he said. "When I called the ambulance, paramedics asked me to walk to the street due to our dangerous unpaved street. I had to crawl for 200 meters while bleeding. Medical treatment became an even more pressing need for al-Zebda after this incident. In 2022, he sought the help of Al-Mizan, a Gaza-based human rights group. Al-Mizan petitioned the Israeli regime high court, which permitted his travel to Nablus for treatment on July 10th this year. Al-Zebda's surgery was successful, yet when he applied for a permit for his wife to accompany him during an October surgery, the Zionist regime rejected this permit. He still has not had his follow-up surgery. Samir Al-Manama, a senior lawyer at Al-Mizan, described the Israeli regime restrictions on travel permits for medical treatment as inhumane. He said, "This is an abusive, arbitrary way of treating people with disabilities. Kefah al-Zebda was prevented from travel for no clear reasons." According to the Middle East Eye, Human Rights Watch issued a report in 2020 that said a decade of Israeli regime restrictions have robbed people with disabilities in Gaza of their freedom of movement, as well as access to the devices, electricity, and technology they need to communicate or leave their homes. 3% of the 2.17 million Palestinians in Gaza have disabilities, according to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics. The quality of spare parts for electric wheelchairs and mobility scooters is poor. They are not always available, and their prices are high, said Ali Al-Hendi, the owner of a workshop for electric wheelchairs. Al-Hendi said, "The motherboard price is 1,500 shekels, $432, compared to 600 shekels in 2012. The average price of a charger is 800 shekels, $231, up from $100 in 2012. I tried to import second-hand electric wheelchairs and mobility scooters last year from the occupied territories, which banned me from doing so. The prices have tripled and quadrupled because of the Israeli siege. 10 years ago, I used to carry out 2 or 3 projects a month for local societies to maintain electric wheelchairs and scooters. Now, I do one every 2 or 3 months. According to the 4th Geneva Convention, denying disabled people access to hospitals in the West Bank and banning medical equipment could constitute war crimes, said Salah Abdul Ati, a human rights expert and director of the International Commission to Support Palestinian People's Rights.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble Hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This Hadith is about God and why we should listen to the voice of the intellect, which calls us and invites us to investigate into matters of religion in order to repel probable and possible harm. In the sense that, the intellect tells us that, our minds tell us, and reason tells us that there could be a creator, you know, who could judge us for our actions in this world, in the hereafter, right? And, you know, because of that, we should investigate into matters of religion, because if we don't, right, it's possible that we could be harmed and be, you know, we could be, you know, we could fall into trouble. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said to Abdul Karim ibn Abil Awja. Ibn Abil Awja was an atheist in the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He denied God, he denied the resurrection. And in response to this person, Imam Sadiq said the following: if a matter is as you say, meaning if there's no God, there's no hereafter, which of course it is not, then both of us will be saved. However, if the matter is as we say, which is of course the truth, then we will be saved and you will be destroyed. In response to this kind of dilemma, which the Imam poses to this atheist, the atheist Abdul Karim ibn Abil Awja, he said, he turned towards his students, his disciples who had come with him to visit Imam Sadiq and in discourse with him. He said, I have found anguish and anxiety in my heart. Meaning the Imam kind of, you know, presented to him a dilemma and showed him that he was in grave danger, because if there really is God and a hereafter, this person would be in grave danger, right? And the intellect invites a person to investigate into matter of religion and to achieve certainty and surety about this matter so as to repel this anxiety and this anguish from the heart that comes from these doubts and these misgivings. Then he said, take me from here. He told his disciples, take me from here. Meaning he didn't want to listen anymore and discourse with the Imam. In the end of the hadith, it's been stated that so his disciples took him from there and he died shortly thereafter from anguish. Faradduhu wa mata. Right, so, you know, this kind of anguish that comes from these kind of doubts and misgivings can be sometimes be so powerful that it in fact kills a person, leads them to great depression and kills a person and leads to his death. Right, so in order to repel this, one should investigate into matters of religion, and the only way to repel this anguish is to achieve certainty in these matters. And this is not something that can be achieved by studying science, or, you know, any kind of the experimental sciences or natural sciences. One has to study the science which is suitable to the subject, which is philosophy. Philosophy is the only science which can actually answer these matters and repel these doubts and misgivings. Thank you for joining us here on the Hadith of the Day. We were looking at Allah and the answer to the call of the intellect in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.